We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. Perpetual Chess is brought to you through the generosity of its Patreon and PayPal supporters. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. As you may hear, I've been a bit under the weather, and before that, our guest was, but we're ready to roll. So I'm excited. We've got another high-class guest this week. He is a 28-year-old grandmaster. He's been a top 50 player in the world, rated over 2,700. He was the French co-champion in 2012, also an author of approximately 6 books. That might be the right number. We'll discuss that with him, including the highly acclaimed Chess Calculation Training Series. He's the editor-in-chief of Thinkers Publishing, and he's been a second of GM Vasilin Topalov, the subject of the just-released book, My Magical Years with Topalov. So, Grandmaster GM Roman Edouard, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Ben. So, thank you for inviting me.
Yes, I'm excited to have you as a guest. Like a lot of strong players I have on a list, and I intend to ask them sometime. But then, if I see that they have a project of interest, that kind of gives me the motivation to strike. And when I saw that you had this book coming out about your time working as the second of Vasilin Topalov, I thought that there couldn't be a better time. I'm really excited about this book. Unfortunately, I've only been able to read an excerpt so far, but I really enjoyed the excerpt, and I can't wait to, until the book makes its way to the United States and I can read the whole thing. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about this project?
So I wanted actually to write this book for a very long time, but I have a lot of work to do. As you said, I'm an editor of Thinkers Publishing, so I can't only work on my own books, but I also have to work on the books of the others. So that book took me actually years to write, because I was doing it only from time to time. Sometimes I would wake up at night and remember one story and would write it down. And so actually, I think I really think I started writing it maybe in 2016, but just took me a lot of time.
And you worked with GM Topala from 2010 to 2014, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, and in the intro to the book, Vasilin himself wrote the introduction, and he kicks it off by saying, in the second half of 2010, my manager Silvio Danilov told me he had received an email from a young French GM offering his cooperation. We asked him to send an example of how he works, an analysis of some opening variations. Roman sent a file with an improvement in the Neidorf, and I liked it. In my experience, a young player willing to work hard is more valuable than a renowned but unmotivated GM, regardless of playing strength. Later, we met personally during the Chess Olympiad, and we agreed on a training session, and it goes from there. So why don't you take our listeners back to the beginning of this relationship in 2010? So you didn't know Grandmaster Topalov at all, and you just reached out to the manager? To his manager?
Exactly. Actually, everything he's writing is exactly what happened. I got in touch with his manager, Silvio Danilov. Everything he says is true. And then we met him the first time a few months after this Olympiad when we had our first talk, and we got along quite well. And the work we were doing was quite effective. So indeed, then it continued.
So I know that you're a strong grandmaster in your own right, extremely strong, but nonetheless, I feel like it might be a bit intimidating to meet him for the first time. How did it feel?
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect. Also because somebody suggested me to write him because somebody told me he was looking for young players to work with. But of course, I didn't know what to expect. Also, you know that there was this Elista Toilet Gate in 2006.
Right.
So medias were not very friendly to him after that. So I didn't know if he was going to be extremely friendly, normal, or if he was going to be like what some people were saying because of this match in Elista. And I was a bit intimidated, but very shortly because he was so friendly, so nice, that after just a few minutes, I was feeling very comfortable with him.
Okay, yeah, and for any listeners who aren't familiar, you can look up, if you Google Chess Toilet Gate, you'll find out all you need to know about this 2006 controversy. But again, just to give this context, this was 4 years later in 2010, and Vasilin Topalov was still, I believe he was number two in the world at the time, so an extremely strong player. So it must have felt good that the analysis that you contributed, he felt like could help him.
Yeah, I don't remember if he was number two at that moment. I think he was a little bit. I mean, I don't think he was number two, but he was very close. Like it was just a few points difference. So yeah, I was. Of course, it was another thing to know if he would be really interested in continuing working with me. And when he asked me after the training session to find more dates and more time for him, of course, I was very happy. And then a few months later, when he asked me to join him for a tournament, I was even happier.
And you were what, 20 years old at that point?
2010, I was 18.
18, wow. So, yeah.
I was 20.
Okay, yeah. I mean, so just a young man, that's just an incredible experience. I mean, both in terms of living chess history, and I'm sure it helped your chess as well. How much did you know about what it would be like to be the second of a high-class player? Had you read books about it? Had you talked to other people who'd had similar work experiences?
I knew more or less. I was good friend with Maxim Vachirarov, so I knew how it was to... I know what he was expecting from his people. Also, I had worked for him one tournament. Actually, just a few months before working with Topalov, but he had other seconds and didn't need me at the time. So that's why we did only one tournament, and then I joined Topalov. But thanks to this experience with Maxim, I really know what to expect. I really know what the job was. I mean, to work all night, and also a few mistakes which I made with Maxim at the time. Then I did not repeat with Topalov, so somehow that's maybe why it started immediately very well with Vasilin.
What were the mistakes?
Well, sometimes you need to work obviously with a chess engine, a very strong computer, and so on, because you cannot find everything by yourself. But for example, sometimes you may focus a little bit too much on the computer, and when you work several hours, sometimes your brain can switch off and you're just following too much the computer and you can miss some human moves, for example. So that's what makes the difference between a good second and a bad second, that the good second is able to combine his own thinking and the computer and the engine thinking, to somehow come up with some idea that others didn't find.
And when you were working with Vasilin, were there others on his team that you were working with, or was it pretty much just a solitary job?
No, as I explained in the book, I was his only second for the first 3 years, and only for the candidates tournament we called another player to help.
Okay, and were you mentioned staying up late? Were you typically traveling with him, or just doing sessions via Skype and stuff like that?
Usually, we did it online most of the time. The first tournament, Vicente, I went with him. I went with him to Norway Chess, but for example, FIDE Grand Prix, I was working from my home. And yeah, we were talking on Skype. And actually, it doesn't make such a big difference to work from home. The two only tournaments I went with him, actually, because I had to go to the candidates, but then my visa got denied. It was in Russia. These were the only two.
That must have been disappointing.
I'm talking actually about it in the book. I tried to get the visa, but the organizer made a big mistake in the invitation. A very strange mistake, and when I brought the document to the embassy, they were just laughing, and they told me I can't get the visa with that.
Okay, and for listeners, there's a free excerpt available on the Thinkers Publishing website, and I'll also link to that in the show description, and that was what I had a chance to read, and it shows the format of the book, which is basically a little background, some historical context, and then there's also like hardcore game analysis. So whether your focus is chess improvement or chess history or a combination of both, I think you'll find something to enjoy there. I know that you've mentioned that there are a lot of good anecdotes in there. Do you have any that you could share with our listeners? Sorry, go ahead.
For example, there was a fun anecdote. The first FIDE Grand Prix he played with me as a second in 2013 in London, which he won. I had prepared for him a novelty in the Queen's Gambit with black, an equalizing novelty in some endgame that everybody was playing, and it was supposed to be a little bit better for white. So from the black side, I had found a very clean way to equalize, and I sent it to Vasilin before the tournament, so he has it ready. And actually, when he got the position over the board, he thought for very long, and he played a very bad move instead of my novelty. Huh. So I was a little bit surprised, and I thought maybe I made a big mistake, and he realized about it just before the game, and decided to play something else. And then he just told me I decided just before the game to play the Queen's game, because it was a tournament. I was not there the first 2 days. I joined in after 2 days. So he told me I was going to play Grunfeld, and finally I decided to play Queen's Gambit, and I just completely forgot to read your email again. So he got much worse in the game, but actually made a draw. And then he got the same position in the last round when he had to win the tournament. And he played my novelty, and he even won the game. So that's quite a funny anecdote, because somehow the first game was a good result because he had a draw. And if he had played the novelty in the first game, he would probably also make a draw, but then he would not be able to play the novelty again in the last round. So I thought that was a fun anecdote from our work.
That's funny. I mean, I'm glad that it worked out, because it must have been a strange feeling just to be watching the game and then see him not play it, and then later find out all the details behind it. And I know that sometimes when that happens, it could be months before the move gets a chance to be played, or maybe someone else plays it.
First of all, he could have lost the game, but also indeed it could have been that novelty would be played later by someone else and not by him.
And at what point did you have the idea that maybe this was an experience you'd like to write about?
I think I thought about it 1 or 2 years later. I didn't have the idea to start writing books, but then I was contacted by Syncos Publishing. I started to write one book, and then I got more involved with them. I became the editor-in-chief, and only at this moment I realized it would be a very good idea to write about these years, because they were unforgettable for me, and I thought I had a lot of things to say and a lot of great games to show. That's why I did it.
Okay, and for your acclaimed chess calculation series, I know that you've come up with a lot of challenging positions. So for listeners, I mean, they're not for the faint of heart. I wouldn't recommend them for definitely players, I would say, under 2,000, but there's some great calculation exercises in there. Was that material that you ever used in working with GM Topalov, or was that strictly material that you found for your books?
No, that's something I need later. Okay. I watched thousands of games to come up with new exercises, because I didn't want to use what other people are. I mean, it would be too easy to just take a lot of other chess books and make my own book out of them. So I really wanted all the positions, or almost all the positions, to be new. And so I looked for games, but no, I did it starting like 2016, so after my work with Topalov.
Okay, and why did your relationship come to an end? Obviously, you guys must be on pretty good terms, being that he wrote the foreword for your book. Go ahead.
Yeah, we are on excellent terms, but after the candidates 2014, so the tournament went very bad. He finished last. Although he was happy with our work, because he got many good positions, actually many ideas that we had found, he got over the board and he got great positions, but somehow the tournament didn't go well anyway. Perhaps he was sometimes taking too much risk and started to lose a few games. And after the tournament, he said that he's not going to play in the FIDE cycle again. And now he's just going to take it easy with chess. And as far as I know, that's what he told me, that he's not going to work with anyone in the future. And I don't think he got any new person, although it could be that he did. And as you can see now, he's not playing so much anymore.
Yeah. Do you know what he's doing with this newfound free time?
He's still sometimes doing some things for chess. He's writing things, giving signals, playing rapids, and I think he's just enjoying all of his free time with his family. What it takes to be such a chess player. You really have to be focused on chess all the time. And now he's very happy with his wife, with his children, so he's just enjoying life, I think.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good to me. And you write in the book that Topalov is one of the kings of practical decisions in chess. For our listeners who, of course, know his name, but maybe don't know as much about his chess style, could you describe to them how it is that he plays?
He's interested only in aggressive moves. For example, when we were having training sessions, in every position he was trying to play h4, g4, he was always trying to somehow mate the opponent, and he was hoping that that would work, but would that not work? Then if, let's say, the opponent would have only one or two ways to defend, which he believes are difficult to find, then he would consider it as a good practical try, and he would play it anyway. And most of top players, they really can't stand this, that what they do is not objectively correct, and they don't want to be worse with white, for example, let's say. Topalov doesn't care so much about this risk, and I think he has the same thinking in his games, because sometimes in his games he's playing very aggressive moves that other players of his other top players would not dare to play.
Yeah, that's makes for fun viewing. And in your working with him, I'm sure you prepared a lot of notes and shared PGNs and stuff like that. But how often did you get to either sit across the board from him and go over ideas, or as we mentioned, talk about things online? Like, how much of it was actual one-on-one conversation about chess preparation and chess calculation, as compared to just sharing ideas via the written word?
Actually, we were always working with a chessboard. I mean, not during tournaments, because as I said, I was most of the time helping from my home. But we had I don't know how many training sessions in Salamanca, in Spain, where he's living. I don't know how many, but like quite many, and it was always like 7-10 days. And at this moment, we were finding most of the ideas.
Okay, and you mentioned before we started recording that you live in Barcelona.
Yes.
Were you in Barcelona at the time as well?
No, because I moved to Barcelona in 2015.
Okay, and where in France are you from?
I'm from Poitiers.
Okay, but everything's like, short plane rides or train rides apart, so I guess it was not too hard to get to Salamanca.
From Poitiers it was, because it's a little bit far from everything. But okay, not that difficult either, because in, let's say, 2.5 hours, I could reach the Charles de Gaulle airport in Paris.
Okay, yeah, so a bit of a haul to get to the airport, but worth it, I'm sure. Okay, so yeah, I'll link to the book. I'm super excited for this. This is my favorite kind of chess book. I love books that sort of interweave history and chess education, so I'm looking forward to it, and I think our listeners will enjoy it as well. But I want to get to your own chess, Romain. I know that you recently played in Gibraltar, and from my somewhat uninformed perspective, it looked like you had a pretty decent showing. You had 7 points and finished in a scrum in the top 20 overall. How did you feel about the way that you played?
I was quite happy with my play. Only had one bad game. And in Gibraltar, I hadn't been doing so well in the last year, so I was quite pleasantly surprised with my result, and I was happy to win rating points to even make a prize money, which I think I only got it once in Gibraltar, and I played so many times. So the quality of my games, I was quite happy, so everything was good.
Good. And had you been ramping up your training in preparation for Gibraltar?
I didn't do any special work. I mean, I in general know enough about openings to find my way on the chessboard. So then in the morning I was preparing a little bit for the games, but my preparation for the event was nothing special.
Okay. And how often are you competing these days?
Quite often, but I'm mostly playing leagues. Every weekend I have leagues, so I'm playing in France, I'm playing in Spain, I'm playing in England, I'm playing in Belgium, I'm playing in Switzerland. So it takes a lot of time, at least weekends. And long tournaments, I'm trying to play a little bit less, because I need time to work on the Syncast publishing books. Anyway, I'm going to play the European Championship next month, and then probably I will have a break for 2-3 months. Not a total break, but a break at least from this long 10-day tournament, because I really need to focus on the Syncast publishing books.
Yeah, you guys are super busy, and we'll get to that. You've got some other exciting titles coming out in addition to your own. But just a bit more about Gibraltar, if you don't mind. So, MVL, Maxime Vachier-Lagrave, who you mentioned that you're friendly with, he mentioned that there was a strong contingent of chess players, of French chess players there in Gibraltar. And, you know, he described hanging out and playing games at night. Were you able to relax and have fun when you're at a tournament like that, or is it just all business?
No, I relax a lot during tournaments. A chess game really takes up a lot of your energy and stamina and so on. So actually, I will not be able to hold the pressure for 10 days if I couldn't relax in the evening. So I don't train. Of course, I try to be serious. I'm not going to get drunk, but I will play some cards. I will have some glasses of wine anyway, and relax. I think that's. Everybody is different, but in my case, it's quite important.
Yeah, I would feel the same way in your shoes. And do you try to get prep in once you find out who you're playing in a big open tournament like that, or is it better to conserve energy?
In my case, it's better to conserve energy. That's what works best for me, and that's what I'm doing for now many years. Some players feel more confident if they prepare and recheck all their files. Okay, in my case, I don't mind a little bit of improvisation, and I prefer to keep my energy for the game.
Yeah, that makes sense. And do you have, so you've been over 2,700, you're at about 2,650 right now, as I recall. Do you have, what's the focus of your chess career right now? Are you focused more on your playing or your editing or writing or just all of the above?
The editing is more important now because it's very difficult. I mean, Singers Publishing is a quite new publishing house, and it's a lot of work. And of course, a new business, you really need to work hard. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to continue because, well, like any business, when you start it, it is financially not so easy. So you really need to put a lot of extra effort. And right now, that's really my priority, that the product continues working. Now it's really well started. I mean, it's really going well. And that's the priority number one for me, to keep the product going as good as possible. But still, my rating has dropped even more. As you said, I was 2,700. I dropped to almost 2,600, and I'm happy that at least I could manage to find some more energy to get back to 2,650, which is better than a few months ago.
And it's 2,650, of course, is incredible in its own right. So it's got to be hard to get those 50 points back because you're basically competing even then against other strong professionals. So impressive to do while you're busy with Thinkers Publishing. So how did your relationship with Thinkers Publishing begin?
That began with Grandmaster Ivan Sokolov, who was at the time with a friend of Daniel von Yersele, who is the guy who created Thinkers Publishing. And at the time, he was basically doing the job which I'm doing now, and he was trying to find authors. So he contacted me, and then soon after he moved to Dubai, so he had no time for the job anymore. And Daniel von Yersele, so the managing director, offered me to continue this job of managing editor, which Ivan Sokolov was doing, and then I somehow got more and more involved every year.
Okay, and I know you guys have a couple books coming out. It looks like Michael Krasenkow, Polish Grandmaster, just released a book, and here in the U.S. we'll be excited for. It looks like Gata Kamsky is releasing a book. Have you been editing those, or are there sometimes other editors that you are able to hand off those responsibilities to?
No, it's only me.
Wow!
We have all of our books. All of our English books are edited by me. I'm not doing everything. Of course, we have native speakers for the English. We have typesetters for the layout, and so on. But everything that is with the chess material, bringing expertise on it and discussing it with authors, that's me.
Okay. And yeah, I really like the cover designs of the books. I mean, they're very pretty and very distinctive. It's easy to tell which titles come from thinkers.
Yeah, we try to I think, as far as I know, we are the only chess publishing company that is actually our covers are paintings. We have some people who are with a pencil and with just painting the covers, and then the final touch they do on the computer. But yeah, that's why they are so artistic, let's say. They are not just some simple thing doing with a computer. They are made by hands. So, and yeah, I believe they are creative. I quite like them. I also know that sometimes some people may not like one cover or another, because like everything that is artistic, it's also a matter of taste. But I'm anyway happy that we distinguish us from the others doing this special covers.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's sort of a golden year for chess books. I mean, it's a golden era, I should say, for chess books. I mean, there's so many incredible books coming out, which generally I think is a good thing, but I mean, it must, as a publishing company, make it a bit of a challenge to differentiate yourselves.
Yeah, but you know, I think there is room for every chess publisher. So I'm happy when another publisher is coming up with a good title and a great book. I don't think that harms us. I don't think people mind buying one or two more books a year if they are good quality. The only thing that is bad for the book business is to have bad quality books coming out. Then people might consider just watching videos or buying online things. I believe that any chess book that comes up in the market is a good thing for us.
Okay, yeah, that's a good attitude, an abundance mindset, which I embrace as well. More quality products in the chess world is only a good thing and can only help to grow the game. So do you mind telling our listeners, giving us a little preview of what we can expect in the Gata Kamsky book?
The Gata Kamsky book is actually very similar to Fischer's book, My Memorable 60 Games. My most memorable 60 games, if I remember the title well.
60 most memorable games, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So basically the same kind of book is analyzing his games very deeply, and with a lot of explanations and a lot of text, stories, context, and so on. I was really impressed by what Gata has been doing. He really puts a lot of effort and all of his heart in this book. So actually he did so much work on it that we had to split it in two volumes, because it was just going to be too big. And so what you can expect is to see, I think in the first volume there are 26 games, if I remember well, but with a lot of detailed explanations. So you can simply expect like very, very, very high-level analysis, but quite understandable for everyone because there are a lot of explanations, as I said.
It sounds great, and it's coming soon, correct?
It's already out. Just takes a little bit of time to reach you guys in the United States, but it's already out.
Excellent. Okay, so I'll put a link to that as well, and I'd love to get my hands on it and obviously talk to Gata if an opportunity ever presented itself. I mean, it sounds incredible, and he's you know, rightfully revered for all he's done in chess. So moving on to, I just have a couple more topics if you don't mind, Romain. our listeners always want to know how to get better at chess. And as someone who's trained world-class players and, you know, a great player in your own right, I'm sure you've been asked this question many times, but what is your general advice for working people, how they can improve at chess with a limited amount of time to do so?
With a limited amount of time, of course, you can't manage something incredible. I will not lie about it, that you need to invest a lot of time if you want to become really good. But anyway, you know, I think you need to play games. So even if they are blitz games, when you have an opportunity to play a few games, even with friends, you have to do it because practice is very important. You need to find openings that you like, so you feel comfortable with your positions. And especially if you don't have time, you know, top level players that are able to play everything, not only because they are good, but also because they have people working for them and they themselves work a lot, and they work so much that they get that somehow they manage to understand every opening. But if you don't have so much time to focus on your chess, then you really need openings that you understand, let's say, naturally. Otherwise, because you don't have that much time to investigate them with a computer, you're not going to get a good feeling over the board, and you're going to go wrong pretty quickly. So a good opening repertoire, and of course, to know a little bit of end games. So a great end games books like Dvoretsky's End Games Manual. And, of course, to work on your calculation, because calculation is, I think, the most important thing in the game.
So I read in an interview on Chessbase with David Nastasio that you mentioned that your family didn't have a lot of resources and your dad had to make sacrifices and you had to work a lot by yourself as a kid when you were, improving young scholastic player. So what did you do to get better?
I was working with my computer, basically. When I was young, I didn't like to read so much, which is a bad thing, because I think it's very positive to read chess books when you're a young player. That's a good moment to somehow get this culture that you can get, for example, reading, I don't know, Kasparov's book, Fischer book. And there are quite a few more famous ones. So I was working mostly with computer, but I was really spending a lot of time and just working myself the way I'm doing it now. Except I was doing it at a weaker level. But I started to work pretty early on chess by myself.
Yeah. Okay, and then so how would you recommend working with a computer? Like, did you just play against it or mainly use it for analyzing games that you played against people or what?
I've never been playing against a computer. I'm not very interested in that. You need to work with, you know, Chessbase, a good engine and a database. Also, if you bought, let's say, Mega Database, then you have some analyzed games that you can check and try to understand. They're analyzed by grandmasters, so you can try to, let's say, analyze their analysis and try to understand what they're saying. Because indeed, if you need to discover everything by yourself, it might be a little bit difficult at the beginning. And I was reading a few reviews. We have, for example, Europe Échec in France. That is a good review. So I like to read what they were. Also, there are some grandmasters who are analyzing games. So you learn a lot when you read what they're saying. I was trying to get every piece of information possible, basically.
Okay, so you like annotated games. It's just that you more often were coming across them through Chessbase and periodicals than through books.
Yeah, I really think it's, well, I also like, now I'm also doing, I'm also annotating many, as you're saying, and I like to do it, but I also like to read it. I think it's nice to understand what people have in their mind. You know, there are there are so many people you can learn with, even if it's just a little bit. So, well, basically it's like a chess book, but shorter. So I think that's, yeah, I like annotated games.
Yeah, it's funny though that you end up, you say you weren't a big reader as a kid, and now you're an editor.
Indeed.
Funny how things work. So last topic, if you don't mind, Romain, I saw you guys had a good week in the Pro Chess League. So you're playing for the London Lions. What's going on with the team? How are things going overall?
Not so great, because until the last match, we had been losing all the matches. So, well, until now, it was a bit difficult because we were getting closer and closer to being relegated. Now, after this victory, we have chances to stay in the league. So we are going to fight like Lions, because we are London Lions. And yes, we are going to try to stay in the league, because now we cannot hope for anything more.
Yeah, so you guys have yourself on the team, GM Simon Williams. Who else is on the London Lions?
We have several English people. We have Justin Tan. We have sometimes Daniel Fernandez, although I think he didn't play this year. We have Ravi Arya, who is also a young English player, like 24-50 guy. And we have a few other international masters.
Okay, yeah, and I saw that you beat GM Eric Hansen, among others, took on the Chess Bros this week.
Yeah.
So congrats on that. And speaking of which, do you have a favorite game of yours from your career? Putting you on the spot here.
I won a nice game against Kashiev in 2010, I think, with the white pieces. That was a nice game. I'm pretty sure there is at least one which I like more, but right now it's not coming to my mind.
Okay, 2010 against who? I'm sorry?
Vlad Kashiev.
Ah, okay. Cool. Oh, yeah. So we'll take a look at that game. What did you like about it?
It was, well, I love calculation. That's also the reason why I wrote books on calculation. That game was pure calculation, and from move 10, I could calculate the winning variation that was, let's say, 8-9 moves long. And somehow, I really believe that almost everything in chess can be made with calculation, including technical positions. I really believe it's all calculation, and that game is a proof of that. It's a proof that somehow if you calculate, if you push your calculation until very far, you can rediscover a lot of things on the chessboard. Because in that game, there was something for, I think, a move 6 or 7 of the line to a move to realize about, and at some point I almost gave up, but I thought, no, I have to, I feel there is something I have to calculate, and then I managed to calculate it until the end, and well, that's really some calculate. I really believe in calculation, so I like this game because it's a good example of that.
And obviously, you've published this chess calculation training. What's your general advice for people who just feel like they try to get better at calculating and it just doesn't happen? They just stay in the same place. Do you have any tips for how to sort of break through that feeling?
Well, you know, some players are more technical and calculate a little bit more than the others, and some others calculate well, but have no endgame technique, for example. So, well, nobody's perfect, but calculation, the only way to improve on it is to train, so to do exercises.
Yeah, that's really the way. Okay. And one last question. Do you have a favorite game, either from GM Topalov or just generally, like a favorite game of all time, not just from yourself, but from any player?
Yeah, I think my favorite game is a game of Topalov, but that's a loss. A loss to Kasparov.
I thought that might be where this was going. Yeah, legendary game.
But that was really a brilliant victory by Kasparov. So that was played in Ugevin, in the in the Netherlands, and the year was it 1992 or 2002? I can't remember.
We'll find out. I thought it was the late 90s, but hopefully.
Yeah, so that could be 1991. Actually, I can find it pretty quickly. That's from 1999, yeah. So that was also a game full of intuition. Actually, it's similar to my game with Tkachev, but at a much higher level and a much deeper calculation, because that was really a variation, like 15 moves long, like some unbelievable thing. And I also like Kasparov what he said after the game, because there was some famous move at the end of the variation, some rook d7 move, which was incredible and which you had to see from the start. And I believe, again, that game is a proof that you really need to give it all when you when your intuition tells you that a variation should be working.
Yeah, it's one of the classics for sure. So for any listener who haven't seen it, or even for those who have, it's always worth a revisit. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Romain, for joining me. I know that you're super busy with all that you've got going on.
So it was a pleasure. So thank you very much for inviting me. And thank you for delivering people with a good show.
Sure. Yeah, my pleasure. And just last thing, if anyone wants to keep up with you or with Thinkers Publishing or anything along those lines, like, what would be the best way to keep track of what you and Thinkers Publishing have going on?
The best way is to follow us on Facebook. Every time we have a new book, we are posting something there. So there is a Thinkers Publishing account. I'm also on my Facebook account and sometimes Twitter account, posting things about Thinkers Publishing. I tend to post a little bit more on Facebook. On Facebook, I'm putting really every book that we publish with some personal comments on it and my personal feeling about the book. So to follow us on Facebook is the best way.
Excellent.
And also, of course, our website.
Okay. Cool. So I will link to all that stuff, and we look forward to many more great titles in the future. And I can't wait to get my hands on the Topalov book. So thanks for taking the time to join me and for putting out such great content.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible. That includes my producer, Matthew Passy, and Geert Vandervelt for supplying the intro music. I also want to thank all of you who have helped spread the word about the show. That includes people who tell your friends and write positive reviews on Apple Podcasts or other platforms. Every little bit helps. But most of all, I want to thank the people who provide financial support. As you guys have heard me say, I spend a lot of time on this show, about 5 hours a week, and even though it's my favorite aspect of the work that I do, I would not be able to do all this without financial support. So most of all, I want to thank my Patreon and PayPal perpetual partners. They are Chessable.com, Ace Vallega, Adam Ralph of ChessEngland.com, Adam Vrancourge, Adrian Gutierrez, Alex Pejas, Benjamin Handelman, Brian Castro of BetterChessTraining.com, Bill Moran, Brett Howard Lynn, Brian Mullis, I am Carlos Perdomo of ChessAtlanta.com, Chad Hilton, Chad Oliver, Chris Balcom, Chris Flanagan, Chris Wainscott, Christopher Baumgartner, Christopher Chabri, Christopher Woods, I am Christoph Zalicki, a.k.a. Chess Explained, Coach J's Chess Academy, Dan O'Hanlon, Daniel Gell, Daniel Ginsberg, Daniel Lucas, Daniel Naylor, Daniel Schaefer, Daniel Vine-E, David Cramley, Dwayne Edmonds, Ethan Smith, I am Alec Donnie Ariel, Frank Tortoris, M.D., Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Geert Vandervelt, Gerard Barta, Giovanni Russo, I am Greg Shahadi, Harish Srinivasan, GM Jakob Ogar, James Bonastia, Jason Woolham, Jeff Anderson, Jennifer Valens of OffTheRook.com, Jeffrey Martello, John Fernandez, John Fontaine, John Hartman, John Jernigan, WGM Jen Shahadi, Jens Green, Jerry Wells, John Thompson, Kare Christensen, WGM Katerina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, I am Kostya Kuvutsky, Krishna Gopala Krishnan, Laura Belyavsky, Lucio Casada Silva, Matthew Passy, Martin Habich, Matthew Tedesco, The Mysterious Moonmaster 9000, Mr. Mike Shahadi, Nate Salon, Nathan Webster, GM Pascal Charbonneau, Passy Passanen, Paul Bain, Paul Clarkson, Paul Sweeney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Peter Merrifield, Quality Chess Books, Randall Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Rob Lazorchek of DiplomatChess.com, Robert Steiner, Ryan Stone, Scott Daugherty, Scott McKinnon, Steiner Lima, the Law Offices of Stuart Katz, WGM Tatyev Abrahamian, Thomas Casper, Thomas Stanix, Thomas Tachenko, Tim Brennan of TacticsTime.com, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, Todd Bryant, Tony Rotella, Tyron Price, Victor Vrankuj, FM Zhao Cheng, and Zhivko Stoyanov. Wow, the list is getting long. Let's keep getting it longer, guys. Thanks a lot, and I'll catch you all next week.
Network. With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.